Welcome to the Women in EMS Michigan Chapter Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Boss. Joining me on this podcast episode, Coping with the Unexpected, a Mental Health Journey, is Lisa Simmons, Field Supervisor with Mobile Medical Response. In this podcast episode, I sit down to talk with Lisa about the unexpected events that led her to a heroic mental health journey in EMS. Now let's get into it. Welcome, Lisa. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks for having me, Andrea. I'm really happy to be on the podcast. I've been with MMR for 10 years. The last four, I have been a supervisor. Pretty normal, boring life. I know my husband and I are both public servants, so we're shift work and craziness all the time.
Good. Yeah. So I really appreciate you taking the time to join us on this very special podcast. I know you have quite the story. So to give our audience a heads up, I just wanted to let you guys know that some of the content in this podcast is going to be intense and it may affect you emotionally. You may find yourself triggered. And if that's the case, we recommend taking some breaks. So again, Lisa, thank you for your willingness to share your story today. So what happened to you and your partner on that fateful night at 2 a.m. while you were traveling on I-75?
We were on our way back to Saginaw. That's where I'm based out of. We were on our way back to Saginaw. We had done a vent transfer down to Detroit, and we were in northern Oakland County when all of a sudden a person ran out from the darkness and ran in front of the ambulance. I had a split second to try to evade hitting him. However, we did end up hitting him with the ambulance and killed him. It was found later that that was his very intention. They found his vehicle about 2 miles away from the scene with a suicide note included in the vehicle. So that was his intention from the beginning.
Wow, that is just a really intense thing to have happen, you know, while you're working as a first responder. How did these events affect you?
I think it went against everything that I thought that I knew, everything that I believed. It was a struggle because when the accident happened, my partner had called 911 and I called our supervisor on duty that night. And the 911 operator out of Oakland County told us, like, don't go back, because to be completely honest, we weren't 100% sure that it was a person that we had hit. We weren't exactly too sure how it went down, if they threw something at us, if they hit us, because it just all happened so fast. So when we were speaking to 911, they told us, lock your doors, stay in the ambulance, whatever you do, do not go back. So to then 10 minutes later to then find out that it was indeed a person, I had a lot of guilt for a long time for not going back. That's what I do. I take care of people. And it went against everything that I believed in. For the longest time, you really honestly go through all the stages of grieving when you deal with a trauma like that. I went from extreme sadness and depression and anger. The anger that I had was awful. I mean, it just to have something like that happen, and but you really do feel it control your life, or maybe taking control of your life. And at the same time, you just feel completely helpless to keep it away.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about what you uncovered as this investigation ensued. So there was some intention there when the person ran out in front of the ambulance, correct? So there was kind of a plan in place.
Yes. The only story that we ever received is that he had had a longstanding mental health history and his spouse had filed for divorce. He had been reported missing and he had been missing since he was served divorce papers. Other than that, I don't know a whole lot of anything else about him. There was a part of me that wanted to reach out to his family. And then another part of me said, no, I really, that's probably not a good idea. The part of me that's still angry, you know what I mean? So I thought that probably wasn't the best idea. I definitely learned a lot about the mental health system after all of this happened. MMR did have an EAP in place. However, it was not what anyone thought it was. Mm-hmm. It was hoop after hoop after hoop after hoop that I could barely get out of bed. I was running on day two, day three of no sleep and not being able to eat and not being able to concentrate. And I honestly thought I was losing my mind. I went on my own journey, basically kind of left the EAP behind and just started calling places in the area in which I live. I made close to 20 phone calls. Mm-hmm. And I would say 15 to 16 out of those places were not accepting new patients, no questions asked, no nothing. And I think I had three or four that said that, yes, they were accepting new patients, but it wasn't going to be until, oh, the beginning of December or maybe the first of the year. And then when I said, well, I really need to talk to somebody now, I was encouraged to go to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's not where I need to be. I'm not in crisis. Like, you don't understand. So it was a struggle. And it kind of gave me, it was an eye-opening experience as to maybe what so many people out there with mental health problems face on a daily basis. I'm looking at one incident. They're looking at a lifetime.
Yep.
And it's horrible because the services are just not there for people in general, let alone trauma specialists, for people in EMS or police, fire. There's a lot of counseling services out there, absolutely 100%, but not all of them are trauma specialists. And they honestly do not know how to counsel us and how to deal with what we're dealing with. They just don't understand.
Yeah. And I think there's something really important there that you're bringing up for those that are on a different journey with their mental health, right? So you may go years before you have an incident at work that deeply bothers you or affects you in some kind of profound way. You may go your whole career and never have that problem, or you might be within your first couple months. And one of the things I learned late in my career was it is really important that you do find a trauma specialist. So you know who you're looking for when you go out there, and you're not just calling any and every place asking, like, I need to talk to somebody, and then not knowing and them having to guide you. It's good to know what you should be looking for. And, you know, EAP gets a bad rap. And I've been through that system as well. And it wasn't very effective for me as well as a first responder. I basically started in that system. And then it was basically, they told me, hey, this is all we can do. They sent me off to find my own specialist after that, which I found to be not super effective because you get comfortable with somebody, or maybe you don't, depending on your experience. But if you do get comfortable and then you have to be sent somewhere else, that can be destructive for like the work that you've already done with that individual that you're working with. So a lot of us in the industry, whether we're on the clinical side or the leadership side or wherever we're at, we've learned as an industry, EAP may not be the best. And I think agencies have done a lot of good work in this area where they're starting to realize, you know, our people need a special kind of person to go to when they have these kinds of issues. And it sounds like you've done a lot of work with your company when it comes to uncovering what needs to be had internally. So can you tell us a little bit more about what the resources were for you, which you've kind of started to unpack, but then what was the silver lining in all of this where you were able to develop some programming to help others?
So I hate to say it, but pretty much when that happened with me, I was the guinea pig. Honestly, there's no other way to explain it. I think our leadership and upper management learned so much from what happened with me, including things that they shouldn't have done, that when almost 6 months to the day later, we had another incident that happened in one of our northern divisions, and things were handled much differently from the beginning. So I hate to say that, but it is the honest to God truth. I think I've said to you before, there's no way to have a plan in place for something like that. There's just no way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not the thing that's going to go through your head. So we developed the mental health task force, and I feel like we're making strides. I know that we have a long way to go. we have a lot of issues with membership. They say they want to participate, but then we find we don't have a lot of participation. You know, when push comes to shove and things are out there, we're finding that they're just not available. So we do have a new EAP plan in place with Pine Rest out of Grand Rapids. And I've heard good and bad. I'm not exactly too sure where we're going to go as far as that goes. Some people have used it and said that they, you know, helped them a lot, and other people had issues. So we'll have to figure that one out. There's a lot of things that I'd really like to see, though. The more that I think about it and the more that I've read, I have done a lot of educating myself as far as trauma responses, how you handle things after the fact, and how you continue living when you have to come to the understanding that your life has changed 100%. And I'm not the person that I was on that night. That person is gone. And it probably took me a year to really come to that realization, like, okay, here I am. Now this is what I have to deal with. And now it's time to heal. You're done being angry. You're done being frustrated. You're done with this controlling your life. And now you have to move on. So I've kind of made it my mission that no matter what, we have to figure this out. And this is just so important to me. I don't ever want to see anyone struggle how I did. It's just frustrating. So I'm glad and I'm thankful for the task force. I think that we're a huge support system, not only internally as far as our division, but also externally. And I hope that we continue, and I hope that we only get better. That's all I can ask for, honestly.
So we grazed over a few things on your journey. And one that I think is key too is you took some time off. You knew that you weren't quite fit to work at that time, right? So you did take some time off. Did you, like, what advice would you give to someone that maybe is listening and has really encountered a recent traumatic event or something that's just preventing them from being themselves and they need that time to heal? What would you tell that person?
I think that ultimately you are the only one that knows that. I think that regardless of circumstances, situations, money, etc., I think that it is so important that you put yourself first, no holds barred. Like, that is just what you have to do. I was off about 3 weeks. And I think the only reason that I went back when I did is because I was fearful that I wasn't going to go back. Mm-hmm. And I had to know. I was getting real close to having being off for a month. And I thought to myself, like, I have to know. I have to know if I can do this job. And that was a huge thing for me, being able to go back. And I made myself get in that ambulance. I made myself drive. Even to this day, I kind of divide my time between the office and the road. And even to this day, I start out driving every morning. I have to. And I think that it's really important that you have to take care of yourself. I was not ready to go back. I know I wasn't ready to go back. I had an awful 2-week rotation, but I also knew that I had to go back. Anyone else, I encourage you that you know what you need. You know what you have to do. I think every story is different. Everyone's journey is different. Circumstances are different. And I think you just have to, regardless of anything else that's present, you have to make that decision for yourself. So take care of yourself first before anything else.
So from a leadership standpoint, and I have been on this side of things as well, it is complex. You want to reach out. You want to show support. But you also understand that everybody is different, right? So some folks mm-hmm. like just want to be left alone to kind of tend to that wound, and others might feel unsupported if the leadership team isn't reaching out. And so is there any advice for our leaders listening today that are really trying to navigate the trickiness and the complexity of, well, what should I do and what shouldn't I do, right, when it comes to taking care of people? Staff, really, employees.
To me, I think the funny thing is that there's a little thing called do not disturb on your phone. You know, if you don't want to hear from anyone, you're not going to. You know what I mean? For a while, I had my phone on Do Not Disturb because I just kind of needed to regroup. Now, in saying that, I had someone from leadership reaching out to me every single day. Mm-hmm. If not all three of them, at least one of them was reaching out to me every day. Hey, just thinking of you. How are you doing? Is there anything you need? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That might bother some people. People might say, stop calling me, stop texting me. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. And that's okay. And then if they say that, then they're fine. And then you stop. But it's that one time that at least I knew that I was on their mind.
Yeah.
And I knew that without a doubt that if I did need something that I could reach out. I didn't answer them every day. There were times that I just kind of left my phone alone and it was a miracle if it was even turned on that day. But I did answer them when I felt like I could. I think it's hard. I understand why leadership has that feeling. I just have to say that when we have things happen in Saginaw, regardless of circumstances, regardless of who they are, I reach out and I just say, hey, I'm here. If you need to talk, come see me, call me. This is my phone number. Text me. I don't care. Whatever you need, I'm here. And people know that. And that's half the battle. They have to have that safe space. They have to have that safe person that they know they can come and sit down, no holds barred, and you're going to keep their secrets. And it's really important that they have that respect from you, that you know they have to have that safe space. There were times that I honestly just felt like I was kind of losing my mind. If it hadn't have been for my partner that was there that night, him and I really truly leaned on each other. And even when we went back to work, we were partners. We were together every single day. Mm. And to say trauma bond, it's not even a joke. We helped each other get through the situation because we honestly felt like no one else knew how we felt. We knew how each other felt. No one else did. Maybe it's true. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But those were some of the mistakes that were made after our situation. And those are mistakes that aren't made any longer, which is a good thing. So yeah, you have to do it. At least have to put yourself out there. And if you get your hand slapped, okay, fine. Then don't reach out, but at least try.
Okay.
That was just a huge thing for me. Just the trauma to the point how it just really messes with your head. And sometimes the secondary trauma that happens after the fact is worse than the initial trauma itself. Mm. And when you start feeling like, oh my God, no one cares. No one really knows how I feel. No one this, no one that. And you start, you know, playing tricks and yeah, your mind is not where it should be anyways.
Right.
So yeah, I just reach out. If you get your hand slapped and they tell you, please, like, I'm fine. I swear I'm fine. And I've had people tell me that. And I just say, okay, just promise me that if you're not, that you'll call me. And they usually say, I will. And that's all that it takes. They just need to know that someone is there. Maybe they'll never reach out and that's okay. But they have to know that someone is there.
Great advice. Great advice. Is there anything else that you want to convey before we move on to our signature question?
This job is hard. It's hard physically, mentally, emotionally. I think that you never know when it's going to hit you. And as you said in the beginning, you may never have that situation, that call that affects you in any which way. I would really like to see more effort in the onboarding process as far as like mental health training, maybe resiliency courses. Mm-hmm. I think that it's very important to get that message out there because you see the newbies come in and they're just full of joy and oh my gosh, and I want to do this and I want to see this and I want to drive lights and sirens and I want to this and I want to that. It's like, hold on there, junior. You know, take a step back because there's way more to that job than just what you're saying. And even just what you're seeing in your few days, it just doesn't happen. And I really hope that maybe we can start to implement some of these things. I think it's very important.
Yeah. And I will just kind of tag on to that and say there's a phase in your career where you're ready to go and you're excited. You want to do everything and you want to see everything. And then there's the wisdom that starts to set in later where you're not going into that house if you don't have to. You're mm-hmm. opening the door to the bathroom when you know what's behind that door, because you know that once you see that and experience that, you cannot get rid of that. So it is a trajectory. And I think some of the wisdom sets in for us, but it is an extremely hard job. And when you first come into the field, you are excited, but I don't think as humans, we can't grasp how heavy and how intense the things that we see and experience are that many will never experience. So that's a really good point. I can't thank you enough for your vulnerability and your willingness to share your story with us. I think those listening will get a lot out of this story and understand that they're not alone, that other people out there experience really difficult things, and the healing process is a journey. So with that, we will segue into the podcast signature question. And that question for you, Lisa, is, what does the field of EMS look like 50 years from now?
50 years from now. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that there's more women in leadership.
All
right. Definitely.
Yeah.
50 years from now, with the way that things are changing now, I honestly would see more virtual, be it virtual visits. I could see more, would be interesting to have that in the ambulance. I don't know how we would be able to do that. I wonder if EMS will even still be here in 50 years. Okay. Because I wonder, I mean, that probably won't be my lifetime. So, but I would have to question if EMS will even be here, because I can only imagine what they could do in the future, not only with virtual visits, but yeah, virtual docs. I mean, I could see all kinds of things like that. And then again, fingers crossed, I hope that they realize that you're always going to need that person-to-person contact, that visual assessment is key and it's number one. So I hope that paramedics are finally paid what they deserve, 100%. And I hope and would wish that people would finally start taking our job seriously, because I don't think they do until they need us.
Yeah, those are good points. Yeah, some things to look forward to 50 years from now, or maybe 5 years from now, who knows, right?
Right.
Great. Thank you for that. Before we wrap up this episode today, I wanted to be sure to share a few first responder resources focused on provider mental health with you in case you or someone you know is struggling. So a couple just to list off quickly, but there are others. Mind the Frontline, you can find their resources at mindthefrontline.org. Code Green Campaign, you can find Code Green Campaign at codegreencampaign.org. And then Frontline Strong Together, you can find them at fssamt5.org. So thank you again for joining us for this episode of the Women in EMS Michigan Chapter Podcast. To join WEES as a member, you can find us at womeninemergencyservices.org. WEES is membership offers mentorship networking opportunities, career development resources, an exclusive online community, educational opportunities, and member events. Student and organizational discount packages are available. To learn more about the Michigan Women in EMS chapter, you can reach out to Lori Thiel at lthiel@mobilemedical.org. To catch the next episodes, you can subscribe to the Michigan Women in EMS chapter podcast on your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, etc., by searching Moz Monthly. Don't forget to follow WEES on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We'll see you soon on the next episode of the Women in EMS Michigan Chapter Podcast. Mm-hmm.